This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Underground, overground, wumbling free. The Wombles of Wimbledon, common are we. Making good use of the things that we find. Things that the everyday folks leave behind. Uncle Bulgaria.
What more could you want on a Thursday night at 10 o'clock? It's just a lovely, beautiful song. Welcome to the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Miles Blumsome here, filling in for Matt Beadle today. I've got George Jones and Kevin Boras with me. Middlesbrough fans, if you're listening and you want to hear the Middlesbrough Fan Show, that is on Love Sport Radio with Charlie Hawkins. This, of course, is Love Sport London. You just have to switch over on DAB or online to Love Sport Radio. But why would you? It's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. That's what we're worried about. George and Kevin are with me. First off, let's talk about the Portsmouth game. How did you find it?
Yeah, Portsmouth was an interesting game for us. We knew we were going into it. It was going to be a tough game. We knew who the referee was. Now, I don't know about you, Kevin, but when I saw who the referee was, I knew something like what happened with Scott Wagstaff was coming.
Yeah, the fact that he only got sent off in the 79th or 80th minute was amazing for a Trevor Kettle performance. Yeah, I've not actually looked into stats. George is more of a stats man than me, but I think that's probably... that's maybe all but once Trevor Kettle's refereed us, we've had a player sent off, or there's been some controversial incident.
Do you think
it's normally one or the other? He did do one in our favour once when he just allowed a Matt Crington goal when Billy Key scored, and as the ball was moving towards the goal, he blew for half time. Had that goal been allowed, we wouldn't have got in the playoffs for League Two. So give Trevor Kettle some whistle room, George.
Of course, Portsmouth winning 2-1, Wagstaff getting sent off 11 minutes after coming off the bench. Do you think he should have been cleverer knowing that it was the referee who it was?
Yeah, I think he probably should have, but the problem is Scott Wagstaff's a very emotional player, and the first yellow card was in a farcical scenario around, you know, what he actually did and what the referee gave as a result of it, you know, an off-the-pitch incident, and then giving us the throw despite booking Wagstaff. Very odd. And then Wagstaff, he just lost his head through the rest of the game. He was going to get sent off at some point.
Kevin, what do you think about that?
First game back after a month out as well, that didn't help.
Yeah, but still, it's about, you know, I know teams talk about managing the opponents, managing the game, but you do have to learn to manage the referee as well.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, we don't do that very well. I think as a club, there's got to be a bit more awareness of referees. People don't like to think... I'm not saying for a minute the referees are biased. I'm not saying that. But we can list four or five other referees that always give us a hard time. Every single time we have that referee, I'll name them. I'm going to name two of them. Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, well.
I will name Brett Huxtable and Chris Sargentson, who have never given us a... And you can see they almost hate having to give us a goal.
You've been very kind to Charles Breakspear by not mentioning him there. I would have mentioned him as well.
Okay, yeah, or that was the one that wouldn't abandon that game. That was Breakspear, wasn't it?
The thing is,
we played Fleetwood on Good Friday 2018. Basically, the game was underwater. I've seen games of water polo and drier pitches, and he wouldn't abandon the game. Even the Fleetwood manager said that game should never have taken place. They brought on a water sopper, which is basically a sponge on a stick. The ball wouldn't roll, but the water sopper, the roller got stuck in the pitch. It was so wet, still carried on. We lost. But he said at the time he thought the pitch was totally playable. I mean, it's absolute rubbish. That's the kind of stuff we're up against.
I mean, the thing is, we can't get touchline bans for criticising referees like you can if you're a manager or a player in the press.
Yes.
So I think we're pretty safe to name them if you really feel that strongly.
I do, yes.
Elsewhere coming out of the game, Sorensen on the bench. Are you surprised by that?
I personally wasn't, because we only signed him last week. He only had two or three training sessions with us. And going in against Portsmouth with the strikers and options they've got up front, it would have been a big game to throw him into. So not a surprise he didn't particularly start. I know some fans were, but realistically, I expect him to start against Peter, and I'd be worried if he doesn't.
Yeah, no, he should. I mean, do you think when we got Marcus Forshawk, we'll talk about him in a minute, but we got Marcus Forshawk from Brentford. He was on the bench for his first game as well. I think that's we only got him on the Friday before we played that other team from slightly further north on a Saturday lunchtime. So I think you get a player in on a Wednesday, yeah, maybe he can play on a Saturday. We've got both of those players in later in that week, and it was a bit too late for them. And I think, to be honest, most of us would not have expected a huge amount more out of the game than that. When you look at where are Portsmouth, 8th, wherever it is, yeah, against, you know, I didn't expect any more out of that game than we got. It's a shame that we were proved right, because most of us thought we wouldn't get much out of that game.
But, yeah, I think
I don't think we shouldn't waste too much emotion on losing to a team that have probably got the biggest budget in the league.
No, certainly not. I think one of the things we have to focus on is the positives that did come out, because there were some. Joe Pickett scored again. That's his third in four games. Anthony Hartigan had his best game in a long time, I thought. And I think a lot of fans are forgetting, because I know he's had a hard time recently, but a lot of fans are forgetting he's only 19.
Yes, Anthony's not 20 till March, is that right? I think that's right. Yeah, most 19-year-olds, or when he starts playing at 17, they're going to have a bit of a dip in form. If you have a dip in form when you're 25, people think, oh, he'll come over it, or get over it, it'll be a short-term thing. But when you have a dip in form with a teenager, fans get very kind of, oh, maybe he's not as good as we thought. He is as good as we thought. But yeah, he's not played as well as he has done this season. There's no question about that. I mean, I talked to his dad via some social media outlets, and his dad is one of those people that accepts criticism of him. He's not going to one of these parents that jumps in every minute. And it's be totally fair. David may be listening to this programme. Anthony's not been as good as he can be, because I think he's got Premier League level quality, but he doesn't have that Premier League level pace, and possibly never will, but that's what's holding him back, possibly.
Tell you what's impressive, knowing the player's birthdays. Knowing he's not turning 20 till March. That is incredible knowledge. That's a great depth of knowledge. you mentioned Force earlier, having to go off in the first half with an injury. How bad's that looking, and how big a loss is that going to be for the side?
That's huge for us. He's gone back to Brentford permanently. From what I'm hearing, he looks like it's a season-ending one for him. He did his hamstring chasing a sort of a lost cause into the corner. His hamstring just went everyone right in front of all our fans. We all knew at the time it was a bad, bad one.
Mm.
3 months plus out. Not surprised he's gone back to Brentford. And you look at, I've spent the last 3 months on this show coming saying, please, Brentford, don't recall him. And in January, he's done his hamstring and he's going to miss the rest of the season. So we desperately need a high-quality replacement.
I did a hamstring, and the minute, I know you can't see me because of the radio, but many years ago, I was quite fit. And I did a hamstring, and it was a hamstring pull, which I was out for about a month.
Mm.
Hamstring pull is out for a month. Hamstring strain is 2 months, apparently. Hamstring tear, because that's where it basically tears off the ligament, you're looking at 3 to 4 months, and he's done one of those.
Yeah, I've done mine before as well. So it's something we have in common, Kevin. I think I pulled mine. It did go black after a few weeks, but it felt like I've been shot. And
it went black?
Yeah, mine went black. I was back in after about a month, but still now, every time I try and run, I sort of go, are we all right with the hamstrings? They're actually difficult injuries to come back from. Even though he's gone back to his parent club, do you worry about Force going forward in terms of just being worried about sprinting properly?
Yeah, you do. You have to. I mean, like you mentioned, hamstrings are one of those things of once they go, they tend to keep going. Mm. And that a player his age and how much potential he has, that's going to be a concern for him. And he's come and he's done so much for us in 6 months. You just got to hope for his sake that he can have the rest of his career without too many more hamstring injuries.
Well, yeah, I mean, Michael Owen is the obvious one. Everyone talks about Michael Owen being ruined by his hamstring injuries. And that he says so himself. Every time he'd come back from an injury, that first 10 games, he'd set off for a run thinking, I'm not quite sure. And he was never the same again. To be fair, I did mine in 1992.
So are you running again?
Well, Miles, you were about five, but
I was not born yet. So just to make you feel even older, there, Kevin, we're still a year away from me. we talked about the referees, but in terms of Wimbledon's all-round performance against Portsmouth, were you happy? How did you think the guys got on?
I think we played well. I mean, I think we had a couple of moments which we weren't great at. I think both goals were preventable. Their first was a counter-attacking goal, which came from a poor pass. Rod McDonald got some stick because of how he defended it, but it was two attackers against him. Really, as a defender, there's not a lot you can do there. And the second goal, it was a free header from inside the 6-yard box. Those are entirely avoidable. And
the problem is, George is entirely correct there. We didn't play too badly at all. I mean, we didn't play that well. We didn't play that badly. But that the but that George said there, but both goals were avoidable. Yeah. That's why we're in the bottom four now. Luckily, it's not. Sorry, Bury fans, but it is fortunate there's only three teams going down this year. But that's the problem we have, is that we play okay, we don't take our chances, but we give away a stupid goal. That's what's happened in the early part of the season particularly, and it's happened on Saturday, was that, yeah, I would much rather we'd have played absolutely terribly and got a point out of it. But in the end, we're saying, yeah, we didn't play too badly. You can pick out a few players. They drove Pickett, play well. Nathan Trott is getting better with every game, and we still gave away two stupid goals and still lost.
You mentioned the stupid goals. Is this a concentration issue?
I don't know. I don't think it is. It's just an ongoing thing. It seems to be more about organisation because it's from set pieces and traditionally, which is where we've struggled, and from crosses in. I think it's more to do with the fact that we haven't had a regular back five pretty much all season. I can't remember how many games we've had where we've had the same back five games in a row, which in the lower leagues is what you build your team on, especially if you're fighting relegation.
I would say we haven't had the same back five more than four times.
Yeah.
It's got to be, because now we've changed the left wing back lately. Paul Lossie's gone back to be on the bench and Nesta's come back in. The issue we have, I think the problem we've got, this is nothing against those players, but we had in Ryan Delaney, and I've gone back to Rochdale, we had a very decent centre-half on the bench, and we were playing a right-back in the centre of defence and a midfield player at right-back.
But I think
you think, well, what's... I know there was a reason, George will tell you the political reasons behind this, but now we've got a central defender in on loan who can play, and we're not worried about. But that's the point. We're playing players out of position. You can't expect... Let's be fair, Shane McLaughlin has not played very much football. He hasn't played more than 30, 40 games in the Football League. And he's a midfield player, and we're playing him at right wing back with a very experienced right back who's pretty much only ever played right back, playing on the right side of the central three. It's just madness to me. Absolute madness.
I think that's going to continue, to be honest. I think the main problem, though, there is that we're using the defence as a form of attack, whereas what we need to do right now is say we just need to not concede. If we don't concede, then we got a good chance again, at least a point, maybe even snatching something more. But the problem is...
Yeah, that's fair. We don't utilise the units particularly well, if we're going to talk in units.
Yeah.
But we don't, I agree.
But I think the thing is, though, with looking at it, you look at the wing-backs in McLaughlin and also in Nesta on the left, you've got even sort of the outer centre-backs in Luke O'Neill or Rod McDonald when he's playing out there. They're the ones who are getting forward and are a creative outlets. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're conceding so many goals from sort of defensive errors, because they're being overworked, having to do too much attacking and defending. Whereas if you said to them, just defend, focus on a clean sheet, I think that leaves us in a better place.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think Luke O'Neill must have the most assists for a defender in League One. You think he's made six goals and he's playing centre-half. It's nuts. It says a lot about our midfield haven't created as many chances. But he's very good at that. His crossing is great. His free kicks are great. Rob McDonald could easily play midfield. They could both play midfield. They've got the skill on the ball and the distribution to play further up. But that's not their job. We shouldn't be relying on our two outlying centre-halves to be our creative geniuses. That's the problem.
Well, that's three games without a win now for AFC Wimbledon. Up next, let's have a bit of an update on the new stadium. You're listening to the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. Miles Blumsome here, joined by George Jones and Kevin Boris. It's just 10:15. This is Love Sport London.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport London. Miles Blumsome here, filling in for Matt Beadle today, joined as ever by George Jones and Kevin Boras. Now, the new stadium, Plough Lane, I've seen some photos. It looks like it's slowly coming together. Is it going to finally feel like home, do you think, after so many years away?
I think it's going to be one of those things where we're desperate for it to work and we're facing the last hurdle, which is the funding issue we're facing right now. Once we get over that hurdle, then we're into the home stretch.
Yeah.
And I think it will feel for a lot of our fans. I mean, it'll probably apply to Kevin more than people my age. Sorry, Kevin. But it means that it'll feel more like home to them than it will to, you know, younger fans who never went there or don't even remember going to Selhurst. But we are in a position now where the new stadium is getting closer. And for me, the photo that we saw this week where they've started putting the concrete in and you can see where the seats are going to be installed. For me, this is the week where it's got real all of a sudden. That in 6 months' time, we'll be playing at our new stadium.
Yeah. Now, George and I come from slightly different camps. We agree a lot on tactics and performances and that kind of stuff. Signings. Yeah, if we said to us, right, which 10 players you would like to sign the transfer window, I reckon we'd probably have five or six the same. However, where we differ is in our, in George's words there, we look forward to it once we move into our new stadium. I'm using the word if, because I'm still not sure. Right? So we've got this bond scheme that's going to be announced in a few days' time, which hopefully will raise enough money that means we can have, or we can afford a much smaller bank loan to cover this £11 million shortfall. The issue is, of course, that money has to come in. So they think we can probably get between £3.5 and £5 million raised by fans. Of course, the fans will eventually have that paid back. It's a bond, so and you get paid back at a decent rate as well. But it'll be in maybe, you know, I think is it 5 to 10 years you get paid these bonds back. I'm not in a position to get involved. So, however, if that works, that's fantastic. So the issue we had in the summer, we all know about it. We had this crowdfunding exercise through Cedars, and that raised, that's it, £2.4 million, which wasn't bad at all. But the issue was that that was not made clear enough that that was really, really important. It was vital that people put money in. I know people have put in a couple of thousand quid who thought, oh, I can just about afford £2,000. I'm happy to put £2,000 in. I'm really helping the club because it says lead us home. And that's like the final step. It's like we're pushing ourselves over the line. Had that urgency actually been made clearer and far more obvious, then they've got money put away elsewhere. They could have put £10,000 in. They could have put £20,000 in. So that was the problem we have. That's what I think they've got to make sure. The people who are behind the bond scheme, and I know most of them, they are really going to make sure that everybody realises that this is massively important to the future of our club. It's not just a nice thing to do. This has to be done properly, and you have to put in as much as you can afford, or we won't have a club. Simple.
Yeah,
very simple.
I agree about that. Awesome. I mean, what you were saying there about the fact that the Cedars scheme wasn't communicated properly. I know that Don Struss getting on and on saying, oh, we got the message out, we advertised it everywhere, it was on trains and everything else like that. But the problem is, it, like you said, it wasn't the right message. The message of, if you don't put in everything we have, this doesn't happen at all. It was a, this is happening, let's just get this final step. And I think a lot of people would have put in more knowing what we know now. But I think the main problem with Cedars is that money could be recalled by individual investors if they put it into the bond instead, for example. Which for me is a worry, because if the Cedars fund drops below 2 million, we lose all of it. So it's essential that people don't take out of Cedars to put into the bond. And I think that needs to be communicated so much as well. But, I mean, talking about the bond, I know the club have put something out this evening saying that there's a meeting after the game on Saturday to talk about it and for a Q&A and for people to get more information. And it's so important we get the ground running, because this isn't going to be a sort of a long campaign. This will be a very short campaign and people need to get their act together quickly. Because, like I said, this will define, potentially if we have a club, but definitely what level we have a club at for the next 20 years.
It will. The issue we've got, though, is that the comms team at the club have taken a bit of a battering over the last few months, and I'm not going to say I haven't done some of that myself. The story says that the bond scheme being launched this Friday is actually a day late. I think they've got the date wrong. Anyway, it's a minor thing, but it's like, come on, get that right. However, I think you're right, George, that it's not so make or break, but that Cedar scheme was like a bit nice and fluffy, and hey guys, wouldn't it be nice to put some of your hard-earned cash in and help the club? Yeah, it'd be nice, I'd help the club. It wasn't help the club, it was save the club. Massive difference, only one word difference. But if you're involved in marketing or PR and journalism or whatever, you know that one word can make a massive difference to a story. And that made, I reckon that one word made a £2 or 3 million difference. And then against us as well. And that's what's caused the problem. So it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't anyone's fault. It was just the wording wasn't quite as urgent as it could have been. But, you know, it's hugely important. But it does look very nice, I have to say. I'm not getting too excited about the about how the stadium looks, because I'm still in my head, I'm still not convinced and 100% convinced that it's going to be as smooth sailing as some people would like to think.
No, it's not going to be smooth sailing, definitely, but I do think definitely we're in a position where this stadium is going to happen. I think the 9,000 or whatever it was, the 8,500, 9,000 stadium vision will probably be what we move into. But I've got serious doubts about whether we move in sort of September, October, like we're currently planning, or whether it's going to be at the end of next season. Because personally, I don't see how we can get that work done in what's effectively going to be 2 months by the end of the bond scheme issue.
I'm presuming, I don't know this, but I'm presuming that the people in charge of the club and from the Don's Trust board, and I hope at least one of those is listening to this, I'm presuming they are engaging in discussions with other clubs based in the London area, just in case we need them. I don't know whether I don't know this, but surely there must be some discussions going on with Fulham, Millwall, QPR, Brentford, Brentford's one of the obvious one. Just in case we don't move in August, if we don't move in until March 2021 or whatever.
I do think that's an important thing, and I do think people need to understand it, because for me, it's the messaging have been coming across of it's now or never. But realistically, I think potentially the best option, especially if the bond issue isn't as successful as we hope, is to kick the can down the road a year and see what we can do, rather than rushing and making a big mistake that could cost us the future of our football club.
Yes, but what do we do? Sorry, Miles, we'll take another show.
No, this is great. This is the most chilled 15 minutes I've had.
What do we do in that gap? So the gap between, so we are supposed to move out of Kings Meadow in May, and then we're supposed to move into the new ground around, yeah, just afterwards. What do we do? So I also presume, again, I don't know, I should know this, I'm on the show, but I don't actually know this, that the club are in negotiations with Chelsea, for those who are listening and don't know, I don't know why you would listen if you didn't know, but Chelsea own our ground. So, well, we play out their ground, nice way of putting it, in Chelsea's point. Are we in negotiations with Chelsea and saying, can we stay an extra year, please? If that is the case, then I guess we have to pay for it. And where's that money coming from? Because Chelsea might do us a favour and be seen as being a big club who's done a lot of club a great favour. Thank you if that's what you're doing. But they ain't going to do it for nothing. And why would they?
You mentioned before about a potential ground share at the start of next season. If you could pick a club in London to ground share with, it doesn't even have to be realistic. Where would you want a ground share?
Brentford.
Yeah, I think Brentford's new stadium would be the perfect match for us. It's a club with similar values, similar history. And also the fact is that they've got a new stadium that they'll need help with ironing out any issues that, you know, inevitably happen when you open a new stadium. So for me, Brentford makes perfect sense, and it's one of the most local ones.
I'm not a huge rugby fan. Mars, I know you come from you've lived many years in a country that is much more of a rugby nation.
Yeah.
But is there not a rugby team moving into Brentford's new ground?
Oh, that is a very good question that I'm sure that we can find out about.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Irish are moving in.
Yeah, so you'd have to ground share with rugby players. Well, that would churn the pitch up. I'm not sure you'd want that.
To be honest, it'd probably help us with the football we play in our league.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, fair point. But I was talking to a Chelsea fan who said this, but he thought that there was something on the horizon that he'd heard, I don't know how he heard this, that Chelsea, that Kings Meadow was actually going to be not available, but we could play our home games at Stamford Bridge, right? That's, I mean, nice, if that's true, thank you very much. How ridiculous is that going to be?
Would you fill it out?
4,000 people in a 40,000 stand? No, we wouldn't even fill out one section of one stand.
Yeah, would you rather be in a smaller stadium, which is more condensed, where you get everybody in, you create that atmosphere, than being in what will effectively just be echoey?
I mean,
ask West Ham that question. Yes.
I think in League One, though, there's so many teams that play in big stadiums that are half full, if that, every week. And it's one of the most enjoyable things in our league. It's been one of the teams that do fill out their grounds more often than not. And I think I would like to keep that, even if it's ground sharing somewhere else.
Yeah, well, like Stadium of Light, for example. So that is one of purpose-built for the Premier League. It's a huge game. England have played there. That you're never going to get a full crowd there in League One.
No, and it's one of those. I mean, you look at Coventry in their situation, playing at St Andrews, Birmingham this season. And for me, if we do end up ground sharing, it has to be somewhere sensible. I don't want to see us at Stamford Bridge, mainly because it would become a farce after about a game when the novelty wears off.
Yeah.
And also the fact of you'll just have so many problems of having a ground with a club we don't share values with.
Okay, Kevin, I know you're being a bit sceptical about this, but we've seen the photos and it does look lovely. The stand looks nice.
Yeah.
Come on, you must have seen that and got a little bit excited about moving into a new stadium.
No, not yet. No, I'm not the most patient of people, is it? And I'm trying. This is my new year, new decade, new me, right?
Right.
So I'm trying not to get too excited by stuff, not to get too disappointed by stuff, and saying yes to everything. So I know I realise this may be that I'm saying no to this. I'm not saying no to it, but the question is not necessarily are we going to move in. It's are you sceptical about this? Are you still do you still have doubts that this is going to work? That's the answer to yes.
Oh, George, you're excited.
I'm trying to be a realist.
George, George, I can see here with a grin on his face. So, George, you're excited, aren't you?
It's one of those where, I've only really remembered going to games at Kings Meadow, so I'm gutted we're losing there. But just seeing a stadium that's going to be custom built and seeing something that I've heard, you know, for as long as I can remember, people have told me about Plough Lane and how we're going home and how it's going to be brilliant. And it is starting to become real. And for me, it's going to be that next step as a growth for us to become a sustainable fan-owned club in League One. And for me, that's what's exciting me, not where the ground is.
Well, fans, if you want to give your opinion, are you excited about Plough Lane or are you really sceptical? Do you not think it's going to happen? 0208 70 20 558 is our number. You can call us, you can WhatsApp us. You can, of course, get us on the social media channels at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. Up next on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show, let's talk about transfers. We're just coming up to 10:30. This is Love Sport London.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Yes, it is. It's Love Sport London. This is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. If you're just joining the show, welcome. Where have you been? It's 10:30. You're half an hour late. If you do want to listen back, remember to keep an eye on the podcast apps after any podcast provider that you use after the show today and tomorrow morning, because we'll be sending this up so you can listen back to the whole show if you have missed anything. Miles Blumsom here, filling in for Matt Beadle today, joined by George Jones and Kevin Borras. And let's talk transfers, because we talked earlier in the show about the Force injury going off in the first half against Portsmouth. It's a big loss. He's gone off, he's ended his season, he's gone back to Brentford, which really doesn't help the side at the moment. In terms of replacement, because Wimbledon do need a replacement, would you rather see someone come in on loan, or do you want to see a permanent signing so that there's not the issue of if they do get injured, they go straight back? You've got time to get them back in the side by the end of the season.
Well, I think the main thing is, I'm sorry to Mark Hendricks if he's listening, but we can't afford a permanent. Our budget will not allow that, which means I think realistically we're looking for a loan. And I think that means we'll end up with someone more like Michael Falivi, who's also returned to Watford, than someone like, I mean, we hit the jackpot with Force.
Yeah.
I doubt we'll be able to get anyone in of that calibre, which mainly means we might need to go for two players in rather than one, and then hope that we are able to try and sort of quantity over quality and hope that makes up the shortfall, rather than getting in another player who, let's be honest, if Force was with us till the end of the season, he'd be on 25, 30 goals in all competitions. And I think that's going to be our big miss, and we just have to hope that's not the difference between us finishing fourth from bottom or being in the bottom three.
Yeah. There's been some interesting links. I'm not a big one on transfer rumours, but I've been looking on Instagram today, and we're linked with two Portsmouth strikers, Ollie Hawkins, who I cannot abide, but I'd be quite happy if he's in my team, and the player who I probably dislike the most in the Football League, Brett Pittman.
Yeah.
I mean, if we got Brett Pittman, I'd be very happy, because he'd be our diving, cheating player and rather than somebody else's. I think he's won, four penalties against us.
Yeah.
For Portsmouth, every single one. Well, and there were three games in a row. He dived somewhere near Barry Fuller, got a penalty, scored it. But he's one of those players that you can't stand until he plays for your team, then all of a sudden you love him. Like John Fashanu was. Sorry, before your time. We hated John Fashanu, he was at Millwall. Horrible player. We signed him, all of a sudden he's the best thing we've ever had. So I wouldn't mind seeing either of those two, although apparently Brett Pittman is on massively more money than any of our players, except one. Most of our players, he's almost on five figures a week, apparently. We can barely probably afford four figures a week, but it's someone like that. Someone you want to replace Force's goals, or you put Joe Piggott back into that position that Marcus Force had this year and get a target man in. Yep. So Hawkins and Piggott might work well, or Piggott with with Pittman. Can I just mention something? I know that you did the advert for Richard and Patrick's show, and he mentioned Glenn Tamplin. He now obviously now the owner of Romford. They've just got a new, signed a new player today. If he plays on Saturday and makes his debut, he will become the 80th player to play for Romford this season.
Well, that you can't expect those numbers in the Football League, though.
No.
Thank God. It would be imagine how many names you'd have to get back on the back of the shirt, because the players would keep leaving. You'd have to keep refreshing. You have to pick the name off and then get a new one. Glyn has said we're after another striker, meaning that means it's going to be two strikers and one centre-back minimum. Realistically, how many players can you expect to come through the door?
I think it'll be just those three. The two strikers will replace Forrest and Falivi, who have gone back. And the centre-back has already come in, because that's going to be Sorensen, who has joined us from Brentford. Mm. So I think it'll probably just be those three in, unless we're able to offload some more wages. Because like I said, whatever the wage outgoings that we've lost in this window will be, that'll be the wage for the players we're getting in this window. It's very much the budget won't increase, especially with how poorly we've done in the Cups. So I think realistically it'll be two loanies up front, probably someone, a young player, but I would love Ollie Hawkins. He's a big, ugly striker with sharp elbows, and I think that's what we've been missing for the last 6 months.
Do you mean you say ugly? Are you referring to his playing style, George?
Yes, his playing style.
They don't have to be ugly in terms of the attraction. He's allowed to look as beautiful as he wants when he walks out onto the pitch, but as soon as that whistle blows, we want as much ugliness as possible.
Yeah. Okay, well, win ugly. I'll be happy with winning ugly. We have actually won ugly a few times this season, actually. That Gillingham game, where we didn't necessarily deserve to win, the Portsmouth game at home, that was pretty ugly. So I think we've turned a corner with ugly football, and we're all kind of happy with it.
Yeah,
it keeps you up.
Yeah, it definitely keeps you up, and it's something that I missed when we had Neil in charge, when we had Terry Brown in charge. That ugly side of the game that wins you those games that are really tough. That's why we always did poorly under those managers against sides near the bottom, because we couldn't do the ugly stuff well. Whereas under Glyn, we're starting to do that. And I'd imagine if we still had Hansen, or if we can get someone like Ollie Hawkins up front, that'll improve us massively, because Pig looked so much better last season when he was alongside Hansen, rather than when he was alongside Falivi or anyone else.
Yeah. And if you cast your mind back, George, this is a personal thing. You cast your mind back to July 2018, George, where you sent our WhatsApp group, our 9 years podcast WhatsApp group, you sent us a message saying, I've been to the training ground. It's the first day of training. There's a big centre forward currently training with the strikers. I think it's Ollie Hawkins from Portsmouth. And we go, oh, that's good. Then you sent us a picture, and you sent us a picture of James Hansen. So I would actually like to have Ollie Hawkins in the building, so actually he can be proved right, although 18 months too late.
Let's just quickly talk about Rudy. Attracting interest from a number of Premier League and Championship clubs. He's been offered a new contract at AFC Wimbledon. Realistically, which way do you see this going?
Realistically, I think we got to hope Rudy signs one. The way I see it going is he signs a new long-term contract now, and then we sell him in the summer. I think that's the way it's probably going to go. But I so want him to stay, because realistically he's the best player our academy has produced, and he can go a long, long way in the game. And he will go a long, long way. In my opinion, I think he'll play Premier League football one day.
Mm.
And we just need to try and hold on to him for as long as we can until we get a big enough transfer fee, because we can't afford to lose him on the cheap, whenever that is.
It would be very nice, wouldn't it, if someone came in with £11 million?
Yeah, that'd be useful.
That'd be lovely.
Yeah, you get
then
what?
We could name the ground the Jack Rudoni Stadium.
what can you get for £11 million? Three players? Three decent? Four decent? Five decent players?
Three stands at our new stadium, I think.
Three stands at the new stadium is what we need.
Yep.
Okay. What Rudy does is he leads us quite nicely onto the academy. And, George, you got a decent academy update for us.
Yeah, the 18s, they came back from their Christmas break this week. They got a credible draw against Northampton, who at the time were the top of the league. Troy Chiabi scored. He's in good form coming back at the moment. He's one of these players who is going to be a late developer, but there's something there that I really like. Matt Cox, who's the young goalie at the moment, came in, played really well. He's been involved in a couple of England training camps already this year. And for me, he's going to be that next goalie we've had alongside Harrison Fulks, Joe Bursick, Will Mannion, who will go on and play for Premier League or Championship academies or potentially England youth sides, because he is that good. And we had an under-15 playing for our under-18. And the under-15 player is seriously good, and I can't wait for more news about him over the coming year or so. because there will be big things to come from him.
How many players in the current academy do you see progressing through to the first team at the moment?
A fair few. I think probably of the current under-18 squad, probably three players I can think of off the top of my head who will make it definitely in League One level. And in the under-16s and 15s, probably another three or four in each of those age groups as well. I think there's certainly a lot of talent in our academy, and it's testament to Mark Robinson, Michael Hamilton, Rob Tuvey, etc. at the academy for making sure that pathway is there. Because even 2 years ago, you couldn't see an academy player establishing themselves in the first team, whereas now that pathway is clear and people like Jack Rudonia benefiting from it.
Yeah, I think that's the good word, George, the word pathway. So if your son's 14 and he gets scouted by Chelsea and Tottenham and us, if obviously the player wants to go to the bigger club and become the next, you know, star player in the Premier League, however, the chances of that are pretty slim. However, if you come to our club and join our under-15s, the chance that you could be in the first team squad within 2 years. And there's a clear path. It's not like, yeah, we've had a few players. You could name them. We've got four or five players in our squad regularly who've come from the academy. Paul Callumbi, Will Nightingale, and Paul Ossie didn't come from our academy, but he's come from an even lower level than us. You've got Jack Madeline and Jack Rudonia who have come up very, very quickly from, you know, we remember them when George was telling us about them 3 years ago when they were 15 and saying these kids are going to be great. You think, okay, George, you go to every single game, you've seen these people, and he's right. And these kids are coming through. And yeah, look at Jack Rudonia playing against seasoned 32-year-old midfield players from Northern clubs. He's 18, is he 18, 19 now?
Yeah, Rudy's still 18.
18 years old. He's not a big lad. He's quite slight, and he's holding his own physically and mentally, which obviously is an equally big thing. So our academy has done some amazing things. It would be nice, however, if what we could produce is players that get into the first team and then we sell them after they sign a contract. We've lost so many players for virtually nothing or for a few grand. It'd be nice to get a player in, watch him for a couple of seasons, then he joins a Premiership club for 2 or 3 million. That would be the testament to the work that those guys have done for us.
But I think in a way we're almost too successful now for our own good in that area, because we've got such an established academy now. Clubs are looking at, and we're losing players who are 14, 15, 16, 17 to Premier League academies. And because of that, we're not getting the money we deserve from them. Whereas we've got Toby Sibbick, who's obviously gone on to Barnsley. And I think the thing is now, what we've learned under what Wally Downs introduced and what Glyn's going to continue is offering first-year scholars and potentially even a couple of younger players senior contracts so we can sell them at a value we see rather than the rip-off that the player performance plan indicates they are approximately worth, which just rips off all the lower league teams.
It does. It's not designed to help us whatsoever. You can't name this player, but the 15-year-old George mentioned earlier on, he is apparently an exceptionally good player, but there are bigger clubs sniffing around him. Hopefully, his parents will just say, no, let's stay there. You could be in the first team by the time you're 17, even at 16. In a couple of years' time, maybe he could be a first-team player. He's apparently that good. Yeah. The legal reasons we can't name him. But also, we don't want other clubs to know who we're talking about. No. Maybe a scout from QPR is listening to this. Going, oh, that's interesting. I wonder who that kid is. Not going to tell you. But he's apparently very good. And that's what you want. Tie him down to a contract as soon as he's old enough. Then sell him. Then you get a million for him rather than 15 grand that this committee decide he's worth. It's just a joke.
Well, for a team like AFC Wimbledon, run by the fans, you want it to be a community club. There's nothing that you want more than to see those local players who've come through the academy playing for the first team, to really bring that sense of community, that sense of fans in the team. It really brings it full circle.
Yeah, and I think that's the important thing. And I mean, there was a sort of a Leeting.com trophy game earlier in the season away to Southend, where at one stage in that game, six of our 11 players on the pitch were from our academy. And for me, that made me so proud, because it shows, it's for a club that's so young, and has only been in the Football League for, 9 years now, we are a club that has got an academy that is producing League One standard footballers.
Yeah.
And that's a big step in the right direction, and we'll benefit from that for the next 30 years, providing the academy keep getting the credit and can keep the work that they've done so far, keep that going and keep us progressing. Because personally, I can see us having a league game with 7 or 8 homegrown players in it within the next 5 years.
Yeah, if the stadium fund doesn't come off, definitely. Sorry, that's terrible. But no, you're right. But again, you're looking at, people are saying about Chelsea, and what a great job Frank Lampard has done. But he hasn't done the work. Chelsea's academies is the people that brought through Hudson-Odoi and Abraham and Reece James and Mason Mount. They've done the work. Lampard's come in 6 months ago, and he's going, he's done a great job. A, he had no choice but to pick them. B, he's now seeing that actually he would have picked them anyway, even if he did have the money. There's no need, because you're not going to get much better striker than Tammy Abraham at the moment, are you? Or better prospect than Reece James playing. So it's interesting that this, the whole academy thing, we've actually done it properly. I'm not saying Chelsea haven't, but he's very easy to come in as a new manager and take all the sort of the plaudits for it. But we know who our academy coaches are. Because you're a fan-owned club, you know who does this. We see these people on a regular basis. You see these kids before, at the end of every season, the under-10s run around the pitch and we wave to them. You think, well, I wonder how many people we're going to see that, you know, playing in the first team. And Jack Redoni ran around the pitch 3 years ago, age 14, waving at the fans. You think, well, he's a tall, rangy kid. He might play. He's now playing in the first team. Has he been a ball boy, George?
No, he stopped. No, he wasn't. He was very highly rated, and as a result of that, it meant that he was too old to become a ball boy when we changed to that format.
All right, it's Peterborough this weekend at Kings Meadow, 3 o'clock on Saturday. Up next, let's talk about the game. Let's give it a bit of a preview. This is 10:47. This is the FC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport London.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
Yes, it is, and it's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport London. Miles Blumsome here with Kevin Borras and George Jones, of course, the AFC Wimbledon fans. If you want to hear the Preston North End Fan Show, the last 10 minutes of it, head over to Love Sport Radio with Charlie Hawkins. This is Love Sport London and AFC Wimbledon hosting Peterborough this weekend on Saturday. George, how do you see the game going?
It's going to be a tough game. We know about Peterborough. We know the sort of side they are. We know their attacking outlets. They've got Marcus Madison. They've got Ivan Toney. They've got Elioro, I think it's pronounced as well. I mean, for me, our main hope is that Marcus Madison doesn't play. And he's the sort of player who you have history against, mainly because of what he did one game at our home ground a couple of years ago. But mainly because he seems to score against us every single time we play him.
He's been linked with Charlton, so you're just hoping that goes through tomorrow.
We just got to hope it either goes through or that he goes on strike to make sure he don't play on that day, again on Saturday.
There's other clubs interested. There was something today, but I think Darren McAntony, the Peterborough chairman, said that he hopes it's resolved by Friday because it's boring him. I like that. But Chartler is in, there's another championship club after him, but yeah, that'd be great. There's also a fantastic headline. They've got Mo Issa, yeah, who plays for them. There was interest in Issa, which I thought was quite a nice, actually congratulate Issa, but if Issa goes and Tony's injured and Madison doesn't play, we're okay. We should be fine.
Yeah, we might we might only concede three if those three are not involved.
Exactly. But what I was interested today, a player that I always liked at Colchester, I have a friend who supports Colchester, Sammy Smodics, who was at Colchester from age of five, I think, went to Bristol City in the summer, hardly paid for them, gone on loan to Peterborough today. That's disappointing.
Yeah, no,
very disappointing.
That's not good news for us, because he's a very, very good player from what I've seen from him in the past, and I think he played against us in pre-season one time and he just tore us to shreds.
Yeah, he's a very good player. And of course, we had the same thing last week when Portsmouth signed Cameron McGeehan, another player I've always liked. So the clubs we're playing on a Saturday appear to be just signing players on a Thursday to annoy me.
Yeah. I mean, Peterborough on a pretty poor run, though. Two draws and three losses in the last five. Confidence will be low. It could be a good time to be hosting them.
Yeah, it is, and we gave them a good game at their place. We got it back. We came from 2-0 down, ended up losing 3-2. But we scored two goals from long range. Pinnock and Anthony Wordsworth scored for us there. Hopefully Wordsworth will be back, because that'll be a huge bounce for us if he is. But I think realistically, with us going in, it's a tough game that we have to accept a point from, as you know, we have to be very happy with a point, because Peterborough are a very, very good team. Probably one of the better I've seen this year.
Well, they play good football. There's always almost certainly guaranteed goals, except they drew 0-0 at the weekend. And of course, we haven't got a game on the 25th, the following Saturday, because we should have been playing Oxford and they're in the FA Cup. So maybe the players can just give it a little bit, 2 or 3% extra, because they haven't got another game. Just give it everything. We haven't got a game to the Tuesday, the 28th. We've got Burton at home. So we've got a 10-day gap between matches after Saturday.
It is.
I would like to think the players just give. I mean, I'm not saying they don't give everything already, but you know, if you've got a midweek game, maybe you hold a little bit back mentally. There's no need just done.
It is typical, isn't it, when we've had successive Saturdays with a huge injury list, then they all get back in the week they'd all be back for, we have a free Saturday. Just seems to be our luck this year. But it is already our fourth free Saturday of the season, and there'll be another one. And then when you're talking about fixture congestion and the number of midweek games, having five Saturdays with no game in the season just seems mad.
You're right. So FA Cup round five, when is that?
FA Cup round five is midweek this year, so that won't affect us. But we are playing Tranmere on quarter final day, so we have to hope Watford do us a favour there.
That's right. So if Tranmere gets the FA Cup quarter final, we won't have a home game on a Saturday after the 7th of March.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Which is, it's just one of those weird anomalies of the fixture list this year where we seem to have very few games on the Saturday and even fewer at home at the end of the season.
Do you see it being a good or bad thing in terms of getting some rest in the players? Like you see, you mentioned fixture congestion, which is always in the news. It's always a hot topic. Are we playing games too often? Are there too many games for these professional players? There's too much pressure on their bodies. But having these Saturdays off, I know some of them are because you're out of cup competitions, which isn't exactly where you want to be, but can you see it as positives going into the running in the league?
Well, I don't think it does, not right now, because it does mean that when we get into February, March, where, you know, we could have further postponements because of poor pitches and everything like that, we're already going to have three or four Tuesday games booked into that period. So it could be we're playing pretty much every Tuesday from mid-February onwards, and that's the last thing you need when you've got a small squad. I'd rather have the Saturday games earlier in the year. But I think
Now squad has been depleted. You know, we got five or six players out pretty much every game. We haven't seen Adam Rossgrove. Anthony Wordsworth missed large chunks of the season. If we can get those, I know you're not a huge fan of Rossgrove, George, you won't mention him. But if you can get someone as influential as Anthony Wordsworth back, not just what he does with the ball, what he does verbally and vocally as well. I like Wordsworth. I think his organisation skills are great. I think that we're missing that in the midfield. If we can get him back and he stays fit for the rest of the season, we'd like having a new player again. Because, I mean, will Nightingale maybe back for the end of the season? We don't really know. Having those two back would make a massive difference, huge difference.
And I think if you look at a midfield three potentially of Rudoni, Sanders and Wordsworth, that is good enough to make up for potentially not replacing Force to a level of someone of Force's ability, just because those three would be so creative and give us so many more opportunities than the midfield we had in the first half of this year. And I think that is one positive of this coming Saturday is the fact that we'll have with 10 games between game, 10 days between games, sorry, it really gives us an opportunity to get that recruitment right and hopefully bed in one or two new signings ahead of that Burton game on the 28th of January.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think midfield has been our problem. We just don't score enough goals in midfield.
Yeah, but that's been a problem for years and years, right back to when we had Nick's favourite player, Liam Trotter, Tom Saws, even Jake Reeves and Danny Bullman. They weren't prolific goal scorers.
We've always
been overly reliant on forwards. And right now, over this year and last year, we've seen what happens when our forwards don't score 20-plus goals a season. And that's why we are where we are in the league.
Yeah, but you look at the players we've got. I mean, Anthony Hartigan's got one goal in 2.5 seasons, and that's in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Callum Riley's got two. Max Sanders hasn't scored this season. Wordsworth Scott's at one. Scott Wagstaff, I think, has scored one this season. Yeah. We just don't have the midfield player that awful phrase. I put 50p in the cliche box, the box-to-box player. someone like Robbie Earle. I know, of that ilk, the player who will be defending a corner 1 minute and then heading in a loose ball at the other end within 30 seconds. We don't have that kind of player. They do exist because they play for other clubs. And they score against us.
No,
just don't seem to happen.
We've already talked about Wagstaff getting sent off and having a suspension. In the 0-0 draw for Peterborough at home against Gillingham at the weekend, Beavers got sent off, one of their starting centre-halves. Is this an area that you need to exploit now, that they'll have a slight weakness in the back four?
I think it is, especially when you look at, we'll have Piggott and, you know, whoever plays up front alongside Piggott will be not regular partnership, though they're having an inexperienced centre-back partnership as well. That gives us something to try and exploit, and hopefully they won't be 100% comfortable and relaxed. And that has to be our focus of trying to get the balls over the top, trying to get in behind, and hopefully we'll try and create something.
All right, let's quickly move on before we finish to score predictions. George, yourself first.
It's going to be a tough game, but I think we'll get a point. 2-2.
2-2. And Kevin?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly the same thing, so I'll stick with it. 2-2.
2-2. Well, that's optimism at least, isn't it? And as I don't do this show every week, are you going to survive this year?
It's going to be tough, potentially, yes.
And Kevin, are you going to survive?
I've said I'm answering yes to questions. The answer is yes, and I think last year we stayed up. Was it one goal difference or one better, George?
Yes,
right?
One goal difference.
I think we'll stay up two goals.
Okay.
By two goals this year.
And Kevin, as you're saying yes to everything, the new stadium, the move's going to happen, right?
Yeah, go on then.
Brilliant. That was the AFC Wimbledon fan show. Thank you very much, guys. Thanks to George Jones and Kevin Boras for joining me. Miles Blumsome here. Time for me to get out of here. We're going to join up with Love Sport Radio now for the Love Sport rerun all the way through the night. This has been Love Sport London. Have a good night.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.